Hello and welcome to Hot Type Security Books and Audio, brought to you by SearchSecurity.com and Prentice Hall. My name is Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. As always, our Hot Type podcasts bring you free excerpts of recently published books from top information security authors. Today's featured author is Ed Skotus, founder and senior security consultant with security consultancy IntelliGuardians, and author of Counterhacking Reloaded, a step-by-step guide to computer attacks and effective defenses. The book details hackers' attack methods and how to defend against various attacks with specific techniques. And now, reading a selection from Chapter 10, Maintaining Access, Trojans, Backdoors, and Rootkits, Oh My, here's Ed Skotus.
Even nastier, user mode rootkit. The application-level Trojan horse backdoors we've discussed so far, such as Netcat listeners, remote control backdoors, bots, and spyware, are separate applications that an attacker adds to a system to act as a backdoor. Although these application-level Trojan horse backdoors are very powerful, they are often detectable because they are separate application-level programs running on a machine. Going back to our soup analogy from earlier, you could use a poison detector to determine if someone has added poison to your soup. Similarly, by detecting the additional software running on a machine, using antivirus and anti-spyware programs, for example, a system administrator can investigate and detect the application-level Trojan horse backdoor. User mode rootkits are a more insidious form of Trojan horse backdoor than their application-level counterparts. User mode rootkits raise the ante by altering or replacing existing operating system software. Rather than running as a foreign application, such as Netcat or a bot, user mode rootkits modify critical operating system executables, or libraries, to let an attacker have backdoor access and hide on the system. They are called user mode rootkits because these tools alter the programs and libraries that users and administrators can invoke on a system, as opposed to the kernel mode rootkits that change the heart of the operating system, the kernel, which we discuss later in this chapter. Back to our analogy. Rather than adding poison to the soup, user mode rootkits genetically alter your existing potatoes in your soup so that they become poisonous, making detection even more difficult. There is no foreign additive to the soup. Instead, parts of the soup itself have been altered with malicious alternatives. By replacing or tweaking operating system components, rootkits can be far more powerful than application-level Trojan horse backdoors.
We'll have more right after this.
Want to know which NAC products can lock down your network endpoints or which firewalls can secure the application layer? Visit our brand new integration of networking and security school. Using a combination of webcasts, technical tips, podcasts, and quizzes, a top-notch roster of renowned information security instructors will help you learn how to secure the application layer, lock down network endpoints, secure remote offices, and much more. Don't wait. Get an in-depth look at the security-related and networking-related processes affecting enterprise network security. Visit SearchSecurity.com's Integration of Networking and Security School today at SearchSecurity.com/NetSec. That's SearchSecurity.com/NetSec.
User mode rootkits have been around for well over a decade, with the first very powerful rootkits detected in the early 1990s on Unix systems. Many of the early rootkits were kept within the underground hacker community and distributed via IRC for a few years. Throughout the 1990s and into the new millennium, user mode rootkits have become more and more powerful and radically easier to use. Now, user mode rootkit variants are available that practically install themselves, allowing an attacker to rootkit a machine in less than 10 seconds. What do user mode rootkits do? Contrary to what their name implies, rootkits do not allow an attacker to gain root access to a system initially. Rootkits depend on the attackers having already obtained super user access, that is, root on Linux or Unix machines, or administrator or system privileges on Windows machines. In a rootkit attack, this super user access is likely obtained using the techniques described in Chapters 7 and Chapters 8, including buffer overflows, password cracking, session hijacking, and other means. Once an attacker conquers root, administrator, or system privileges on a machine, a rootkit is a suite of tools that let the attacker maintain super user access by implementing a backdoor and hiding evidence of the system compromise. User mode rootkits are available for a variety of platforms, including Linux, BSD, Solaris, HPUX, AIX, and other Unix variations. Several user mode rootkits have been released for Windows platforms as well. We'll look at Linux, Unix, and Windows user mode rootkits separately in this chapter. Windows user mode rootkits. As we've seen, most Linux and Unix user mode rootkits replace critical operating system program files with evil substitutes. Most Windows user mode rootkits opt for a slightly different approach, altering the memory of running processes associated with the operating system. By altering the memory of a running process, such as Task Manager or an executing netstat program, the attacker can hide processes and TCP and UDP port usage without even changing the file associated with these executables on the hard drive. We've still got a user mode rootkit, though, because the bad guy is altering the operating system components that users and administrators rely on. This change in tactics for Windows systems is caused by several factors, but two are paramount. First, the difficulty Windows puts on altering critical files in the file system. Starting with Windows 2000 and later, Microsoft has included a built-in file integrity checker in Windows called Windows File Protection, WFP. This capability runs silently in the background, monitoring thousands of critical operating system files to see if they are changed in an unauthorized fashion. If WFP detects a change, it rolls back the original version of the file. Therefore, if an attacker replaces some critical files with rootkit versions, WFP quickly cleans up and, in effect, uninstalls the rootkit. Although there are methods for disabling WFP, such tactics are not typically utilized because it's far easier to make a Windows rootkit without altering files in the file system. Secondly, the ease with which Windows lets one running process access another process. The Windows operating system includes various API calls that let one running process connect to and debug another running process, as long as the first process has debug rights. These rights are given to administrator accounts by default. Thus, an attacker can use an evil process running as administrator to connect to another running process, such as Task Manager. The evil process can then read and even change the memory inside the target process, overriding software inside of that process to change its behavior and capabilities. Windows User Mode Rootkit Hiding Tactics. Let's analyze how a Windows User Mode Rootkit can help an attacker hide on a Windows machine by altering running processes. First, we need to think about what an attacker might want to hide. The bad guys want to disguise their presence on a machine by making their malicious processes, files, registry keys, and active TCP and UDP ports invisible to running programs on the machine. Most Windows applications used by administrators to look for these elements rely on a handful of API calls into the various Windows libraries, especially ntdll.dll, a big library used by many programs to interact with Windows itself. For example, the built-in Windows Task Manager makes various calls into certain critical libraries to determine which processes are running. Similarly, the dir command and the Windows File Explorer use a specific set of API calls to determine which files are present on the machine. Likewise, regedit and netstat look for registry keys and TCP UDP ports, respectively, with certain calls. While each one of these programs is running, its process memory contains the code to invoke these functions so the program can display the system status. A running rootkit can overwrite these API calls in each running process so that they point not to the normal Windows code to implement the function, but instead to the attacker's own code. This process of using debug privileges to overwrite API calls in running processes is called API hooking. So a process like Task Manager will make an API call to get a list of running processes on the machine. Typically, Task Manager uses the NTQuery System Information API call to get this list of processes. However, the rootkit process can overwrite this API call so that Task Manager unknowingly accesses the attacker's code. Attacker's code will likewise get a list of running processes using the normal NTQuery System Information API call. However, before giving the results back to Task Manager, the attacker's code filters out certain processes from the list that the attacker doesn't want the user to see. In effect, the attacker is wrapping the normal API handling code for NTQuery System Information with the attacker's own functionality. So in the end, Task Manager will see only those running processes the attacker wants it to see. Beyond Task Manager and the NTQuery System Information API call, many Windows user mode rootkits hook more than a dozen different API calls to hide various aspects of the system. The table below lists a handful of the most popular API calls on Windows machines that user mode rootkits hook. It's important to note that this list is a small sampling of some of the commonly hooked API calls. Some user mode rootkits hook many additional API calls to hide on the system. In the table, we have the API call hooked by the rootkit, the purpose of the API call, and the rootkit's purpose in hooking the API. First, we have NTQuery System Information, which is designed to show the status of the system, including running processes and performance data. The attackers hook this to hide particular running processes. We have NT query directory file, which normally shows a list of files and directories. Attackers change this so that it hides particular files in the file system. We have NT enumerate key, which searches for specific keys in the Windows registry. Attackers change this so that it hides particular registry keys. And finally, we have NT read virtual memory, which reads specific areas of memory from a running process. Attackers alter this to prevent rootkit detection tools from looking in memory for hooked API calls. One of the more interesting items from this table is the hook for the NT read virtual memory call. Sometimes investigators run debuggers to connect to running processes and interrogate memory for signs of API hooking, namely Windows API calls that have been overwritten by the attacker's code. But investigators and their debuggers often rely on the NT read virtual memory call to look for such signs of a rootkit. By hooking this API call, some rootkits attempt to thwart this style of investigation. When the NT read virtual memory call is made, the attacker returns a normal-looking memory image to the debugger, masking any hints that the memory has been altered via API hooking. That's very subtle, and an amazing feat of anti-detection technology for the bad guys. Implementing Windows User Mode Rootkit backdoors. In addition to API hooking for stealth capabilities, many Windows User Mode Rootkits include a command shell backdoor, similar in functionality to the Netcat command shell listeners we covered at the beginning of this chapter, offering up cmd.exe access across the network. It's important to note that the backdoor program's file, running process, and port number are all hidden using various API hooking mechanisms. Some particular examples of Windows User Mode Rootkits. One of the most popular User Mode Rootkits for Windows is Hacker Defender, also known as HXDEF, written by a rootkit designer who calls himself Holy Father. A nickname like that must make for interesting conversations with local clergy. Hacker Defender, located at hxdef.czweb.org, is designed not to defend a system against attackers. Quite the opposite is true, in fact. Hacker Defender is designed to defend the bad guys. The tool is centered around API hooking, which it uses to hide an enormous number of artifacts on a system that attackers might want to mask. Its features include the following: hiding files, processes, system services, system drivers, registry keys, and values, and TCP and UDP ports. Lying to users and administrators about how much free space is available on the hard drive, so an attacker can mask the size of archives of pirated software, sniffed passwords, pornography, and other items the attackers deposited on the system. Hiding the alterations it makes to running processes when hooking APIs to thwart investigators using debuggers. And creating a remotely accessible command shell backdoor made invisible on the local system through the API hooking mechanism. Implementing a relay that redirects packets across the network, obscuring their source, like the Netcat relays we discussed earlier in the book and the remote control backdoor capabilities we discussed earlier in this chapter. All of this functionality is achieved by a new service introduced into the system called HXDEF by default that runs in the background and monitors system activities to make sure everything is hidden appropriately. Oh, and of course, this HXDEF process itself is hidden from view using the same API hooking procedures. All of this action is controlled by a configuration file that is included with Hacker Defender. In this INI file, the attacker has to specify in advance each of the elements that needs to be hidden, using a convenient syntax such as hidden ports, TCP colon port number, and hidden reg values, followed by a registry key name. Although this configuration file format is pretty straightforward, it does take some getting used to. What's more, if, after installing Hacker Defender, the attacker creates any additional artifacts on the system, they have to remember to go back to the INI file and tweak it to hide their new item. If they forget to do so, a diligent system administrator might notice the attacker's presence. To help alleviate this concern, an attacker can configure the INI file with wildcard characters so that all files, processes, and registry keys that start with a given sequence of characters will be hidden, regardless of when they are created after the rootkit is installed. By default, any of these items whose names start with HXDEF is hidden. The figures in the book show Hacker Defender in action. For this demonstration, the attacker ran a Netcat backdoor listener, which was named evilnc.exe, on TCP port 2222, ready to invoke a cmd.exe on receiving a connection, using the syntax evilnc minus capital L minus P 2222 minus E cmd.exe, of course. As you can see in the figures, before the rootkit is installed, we can see the Hacker Defender rootkit and its configuration file in the file viewer, named HXDEF100. The netstat command shows TCP port 2222 listening for connections, and the evil nc.exe process is visible in Task Manager. Then the attacker installed the rootkit simply by running its executable file with administrator privileges. After the rootkit is installed, the hxdef100 rootkit executable and configuration file, as well as TCP port 2222 and the evil nc.exe process, simply disappear. Yet the evil netcat backdoor continues to run, offering the attacker remote access to the box, well hidden by Hacker Defender. Besides Hacker Defender, another popular user mode rootkit for Windows is the AFX Windows rootkit, developed by a developer who calls himself AFX. This tool was originally released in 2003, but it has been updated several times since then. As with Hacker Defender, the AFX Windows rootkit uses API hooking techniques to hide files, processes, registry keys, and TCP and UDP ports. What makes this tool special is its ability to create a hidden world for the attacker on the victim machine. Remember how we mentioned earlier that an attacker must remember to hide new artifacts carefully by tweaking the INI configuration file for Hacker Defender? If the attacker gets sloppy, some artifacts won't be hidden, giving a suspicious system administrator the ability to detect the attacker. The AFX Windows rootkit avoids this concern in a particularly ingenious way. It centers everything around the concept of a single hidden directory. The attacker places the AFX Windows rootkit executable in one directory on the victim machine and runs it. The rootkit then hides this rootkit directory from view. Then everything else that happens from this rootkit directory is hidden. Any files or subdirectories created in the rootkit directory are hidden. Any executables that run out of the rootkit directory or its subdirectories will have hidden processes. Any registry keys created by these invisible processes will be hidden. And any TCP or UDP ports used by processes running out of the rootkit directory will be hidden. In other words, the attacker doesn't have to remember to go back and hide any newly created artifacts on the system. As long as the bad guy works out of the hidden directory, all items will be automatically invisible on the machine. The rootkit maintains an inventory of artifacts on behalf of the attacker and hides them in a systematic way. In a sense, the rootkit erects a cone of invisibility around the hidden directory, not letting system administrators or users see what is happening inside. No rootkit configuration is therefore necessary by the attacker because everything is hidden automatically. Rootkit detection. Rootkit Revealer by Mark Rusinovich at www.sysinternals.com offers the ability to detect a rootkit. Also, Blacklight by the antivirus vendor F-Secure at www.f-secure.com/blacklight can detect rootkits. Both tools are available for free and do a fantastic job of detecting Windows rootkits, both the user mode and kernel mode variants. To accomplish this, these tools run in both user mode and in kernel mode, looking for discrepancies between what is visible in user mode and what is viewable inside the kernel regarding the file system and registry. For example, suppose a user mode or kernel mode rootkit hides some files from view. The user mode component of these Windows rootkit checkers will therefore not be able to see these hidden files. However, the kernel mode component of the rootkit checker will see the files and flag the discrepancy for an administrator. Bingo! We've detected the rootkit. However, it is important to note that you might get a false positive notification from any of these automated rootkit checking tools, whether for Linux, Unix, or Windows. Some completely benign programs do introduce the anomalies that these tools look for, particularly security tools running on a Windows environment. Some legitimate personal firewall tools and antivirus programs try to hide files and processes from users and malicious code by altering the system using the same techniques as user mode and kernel mode rootkits. These rootkit detectors discover these hiding techniques and warn their users of potential rootkit infestation. So in effect, we've got security software, the automated rootkit checkers, detecting the techniques used by other security software, personal firewalls and antivirus tools, while it tries to hide from malicious software, worms, bots, and even rootkits. Making matters even more interesting, some of the antivirus tools alert while a rootkit checker like Rootkit Revealer or Blacklight execute, because they notice the calls made into the kernel by these tools, which would be suspicious under other circumstances.
Once again, that was Ed Skoutis, founder and senior security consultant with security consulting firm Intel Guardians, reading a selection from his book, Counterhack Reloaded, A Step-by-Step Guide to Computer Attacks and Effective Defenses, available now from Prentice Hall. As always, we have more information security podcasts available for you on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. We thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.